She thanked them very prettily, but when their leader, Brontes, tried to take her on his knee, she tore a great handful of hair from his chest. He put her down quickly and went away cursing. Holding her silver bow high, screaming with joy, she raced across the field and valley and hill, followed by her nymphs, who streamed after her with flashing knees and floating hair, laughing and singing. She came to Arcadia, where Pan was feeding his hounds. "Oh, Pan," she cried, "oh, little king of the wood, my favorite cousin, please give me some of your dogs, the best ones, please." "And what will you give me in return?" he said, looking at the nymphs. "Choose," she said. "But I should warn you, cousin, that like me, they have taken an unbreakable vow of chastity." "Never mind," said Pan, "keep them. What dogs do you fancy?" "That one, and that one, and that one," she cried, "and this one. And I must have him and him." He gave her his 10 best dogs. 3 of them were huge black and white hounds, able to catch a live lion and drag it back to the hunter. The others were lean white deer hounds. Any one of them could outrun a stag. Artemis was wild to try out her new gifts. She sent her white hounds racing after 2 deer, bidding them bring back the animals unharmed. She harnessed the deer to her silver chariot and drove away. She saw a tree which had been struck by lightning. It was still smoldering. She had her nymphs break pine branches and thrust them into the cinders, for night was coming and she wanted light to shoot by. She was too impatient to wait for dawn. 4 times she shot her silver bow. First she split a pine tree, then an olive tree, then she shot a wild boar. Lastly, she shot an arrow into a city of unjust men, and the arrow pierced all of them, never ceasing its flight till they were all dead. And the people, seeing her ride over the mountains, wielding her silver bow, followed by the maidens and their torches, called her the goddess of the moon. Some called her the maiden of the silver bow. Others called her lady of the wild things. Some called her the huntress. Others simply the maiden. And so she had her last gift, many names. She let no man approach her. Once a young man named Actaeon glimpsed her bathing in a stream. She was so beautiful, he could not bear to go away, but hid there, watching. She saw him and immediately changed him into a stag. Then she whistled up her hounds, who tore him to pieces. She tried to impose the same rule upon her nymphs, which was difficult. Zeus himself seduced one of the most beautiful, named Callisto. When Artemis learned of this, she changed Callisto into a she-bear and whistled to her dogs. They came leaping and howling and would have torn the bear to pieces too. But Zeus happened to notice what was going on. He caught Callisto up and set her among the stars, still in her bear shape so the arrow would not be suspicious. Once Artemis found her vow difficult to keep. But that is another story, the story of Orion, which comes later. Artemis. Father Zeus was by no means an attentive parent. He had so many children in so many different circumstances, he could scarcely keep them all in mind. However, he was not permitted to forget Leto's children. They were too beautiful, and beauty was the quality he found most attractive. As he looked down from Olympus, their faces seemed to blaze from among all the children on earth. It seemed to him that they cast their own light. These twins, each one different. Apollo, a ruddy light. Artemis, a silver light. And he knew that they were true godlings and must be brought to Olympus. He sent for them on their 3rd birthday. He had Hephaestus make Apollo a golden bow and a quiver of golden arrows that could never be emptied, and a golden chariot drawn by golden ponies. But he withheld Artemis' gifts. He preferred her, and he wanted her to ask him for things. He took her on his lap and said, "What gifts would you fancy, little maid?" She said, "I wish to be your maiden always, never a woman, and these things, may I? Zeus answered, for a child like you, it is worthwhile braving Hera's wrath once in a while. You shall have more than you asked for. You shall have the gift of eternal chastity, and also the gift of changing your mind about it at any time, which will help you not to want to. And finally, the greatest gift of all, you shall go out and choose your own gifts, so that they will have a special value. She kissed them and whispered her thanks into his ear, and then went running off to choose her gifts. She went to the woods and to the river and to the ocean stream and selected the most beautiful nymphs for her court. She visited Hephaestus in the smoky smithy inside the mountain and said, I've come for my bow, a silver one, please. He said, silver is more difficult to work than gold. It needs cool light. It should be made underwater. You must go deep beneath the sea, off the island of Lipara, where my cyclopes are making a horse trough for Poseidon, who thinks of nothing but horses these days. So Artemis and her nymph swam underwater to where the cyclopes were hammering a great trough. The nymphs were frightened at the sight of the huge, one-eyed, scowling brutes, and they hated the noise of the hammering. But Artemis jumped up on the forge and said, I come with a message from Hephaestus. He bids you put aside his horse trough and make me a silver bow and a quiver of silver arrows, which will fill again as soon as it is empty. If you do this, I shall give you the first game I shoot. The Cyclopes, who were very greedy and tired of working on the horse trough, agreed. When they had finished her bow, she thanked them very prettily. But when their leader, Brontes, tried to take her on his knee, she tore a great handful of hair from his chest. He put her down quickly and went away cursing. Holding her silver bow high, screaming with joy, she raced across the field and valley and hill, followed by her nymphs, who streamed after her with flashing knees and floating hair, laughing and singing. She came to Arcadia, where Pan was feeding his hounds. Oh, Pan, she cried, oh, little king of the wood, my favorite cousin, please give me some of your dogs, the best ones, please. And what will you give me in return? He said, looking at the nymphs. Choose, she said. But I should warn you, cousin, that like me, they have taken an unbreakable vow of chastity. Never mind, said Pan, keep them. What dogs do you fancy? That one, and that one, and that one, she cried, and this one. And I must have him, and him. He gave her his 10 best dogs. 3 of them were huge black and white hounds, able to catch a live lion and drag it back to the hunter. The others were lean white deer hounds. Any one of them could outrun a stag. Artemis was wild to try out her new gifts. She sent her white hounds racing after 2 deer, bidding them bring back the animals unharmed. She harnessed the deer to her silver chariot and drove away. She saw a tree which had been struck by lightning. It was still smoldering. She had her nymphs break pine branches and thrust them into the cinders, for night was coming and she wanted light to shoot by. She was too impatient to wait for dawn. 4 times she shot her silver bow. First, she split a pine tree, then an olive tree, then she shot a wild boar. Lastly, she shot an arrow into a city of unjust men, and the arrow pierced all of them, never ceasing its flight till they were all dead. And the people, seeing her ride over the mountains, wielding her silver bow, followed by the maidens and their torches, called her the goddess of the moon. Some called her the maiden of the silver bow. Others called her lady of the wild things. Some called her the huntress. Others simply the maiden. And so she had her last gift. Many names. She let no man approach her. Once a young man named Actaeon glimpsed her bathing in a stream. She was so beautiful, he could not bear to go away, but hid there, watching. She saw him and immediately changed him into a stag. Then she whistled up her hounds, who tore him to pieces. She tried to impose the same Zeus happened to notice what was going on. He caught Callisto up and set her among the stars, still in her bear shape so the arrow would not be suspicious. Once Artemis found her vow difficult to keep. But that is another story. The story of Orion, which comes later. Apollo. Apollo was the most beautiful of the gods. His hair was dark gold, his eyes stormy blue. He wore a tunic of golden panther skin, carried his golden bow, and wore a quiver of golden arrows. His chariot was beaten gold, his horses were white with golden manes and flame-colored eyes. He was god of the sun always. Later, he became patron of music, poetry, mathematics, and medicine. Later, when he was a mature god, he preached moderation. He bade his worshippers to look first into their own hearts and to find there the beginnings of wisdom and to conduct themselves prudently in all things. But in his youth, he did many cruel and wanton deeds. Several times he was almost expelled from the company of the gods by Zeus, whom he had angered with his wild folly. As soon as he was given his bow and arrows, he raced down from Olympus to hunt the python who had hunted his mother. Dryads, who were tattletales, told him he could find his enemy at Mount Parnassus. There he sped. As he stood on a hill, he saw the great serpent weaving its dusty coils far below. He notched an arrow, drew his bow, and let it fly. It darted like light. He saw it strike, saw the huge coils flail in agony, shouting with savage glee. He raced down the slope, but when he got there, he found the serpent gone. It had left a trail of blood, which he followed to the oracle of Mother Earth at Delphi. Python was hiding in a cave, where he could not be followed. Apollo breathed on his arrowheads and shot them into the cave as fast as he could. They broke into flames when they hit. Smoke filled the cave and the serpent had to crawl out. Apollo, standing on a rock, shot him so full of arrows he looked like a porcupine. He skinned the great snake and saved the hide for a gift. Now, it was a sacred place where he had done this killing. Here lived the oracles of Mother Earth, whom the gods themselves consulted. They were priestesses, dreamt from infancy. They chewed laurel, built fire of magic herbs, and sat in the smoke, which threw them into a trance wherein they saw and told in riddles what was to come. Knowing that he had already violated a shrine, Athalo thought he might as well make his deed as large as possible and claim the oracles for his own, bidding them to prophesy in his name. When Mother Earth complained to Zeus about the killing of her python, Apollo smoothly promised to make amends. He instituted annual games at Delphi in celebration of his victory, and these he graciously named after his enemy, calling them the Pythian Games, and he named the oracles Pythonesses. Less excusable was Apollo's treatment of a satyr named Marsyas. This happy fellow had the misfortune to be an excellent musician, a realm Apollo considered his own, and where he would brook no rivalry. Hearing the satyr praised too often, Apollo invited him to a contest. The winner was to choose a penalty to which the loser would have to submit, and the muses were to judge. So Marsyas played his flute, and Apollo played his lyre. They played exquisitely. The muses could not choose between them. Then Apollo shouted, "Now you must turn your instrument upside down and play and sing at the same time. This is the rule. I go first." Thereupon the god turned his lyre upside down and played and sang a hymn praising the gods, and especially their beautiful daughters, the muses. "But you cannot play a flute upside down, and certainly cannot sing while playing it." So Marsyas was declared the loser. Apollo collected his prize. He flayed Marsyas alive and nailed his skin to a tree. A stream gushed from the tree roots and became a river. On the banks of that